VolitionRx, a multinational epigenetics company revolutionizing cancer diagnosis with the development of simple, easy-to-use, cost-effective blood tests involving a range of cancers and other diseases. Volition's clinical trials in human health have shown promising results in detecting several cancer types, including colorectal, lung, and a variety of bloodborne cancers. VolitionRx. Web address, volition.com.
The proceeding may contain forward-looking statements which may not be realized.
I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network. Vladimir Putin, the man declared president as long as he wishes in a recent decision in 2020 about extending or removing term limits. However, Vladimir Putin, to read the headlines from outside Russia, has a rival. His name is Alexei Navalny. That is part of the larger news cycle I learned from reading The Economist magazine. And I welcome The Economist magazine's Russia guide, the man who's going to help me understand modern Russia, Arkady Ostrovsky in London. Arkady, a very good day to you. And the headlines say that Alexei Navalny has ended his hunger strike, and yet he remains very weak. The headlines also say that Vladimir Putin's state security apparatus in some fashion is moving against the nascent Navalny political ambitions. The headlines also say that Vladimir Putin is looking for a summit with Joe Biden, the new president of the United States. All these things run together, so I want to begin with Navalny. What is the measure of his political strength? Do we have a way of judging how many people follow him and how many people see his vision for the future for Russia? Good day to you.
And very good day to you, John. Thank you for having me on your show. It is a very important moment, both for Russia and for the world, given that Russia continues to present a very considerable threat, not least through meddling in the U.S. elections and attacking neighbors and still, obviously, a major nuclear superpower. But let's start with Navalny, even though all those things, as you suggested, are actually connected. So in terms of how many people follow Navalny or know of Navalny, let me put it this way. For the majority of Russians, whatever they think of Alexei Navalny, they know there are two principal politicians in the country now. One is Vladimir Putin, and the other is his nemesis and enemy, Alexei Navalny, who is now in jail. I think the vast majority of Russian people know who he is. They may not support his platform. They may not approve, or at least publicly not state that they support him, because this is becoming dangerous now in Russia. But they certainly follow and know him. He is the number one political opposition to Vladimir Putin. And he is something we haven't seen in Russian politics for over a century, a self-made man who sort of burst from the outside to take on the established regime. Probably not since, some would say, since Vladimir Lenin. So he, as you say, he's in jail. He had been on hunger strike for more than 3 weeks. He now said he is ending this strike because the authorities have met his condition to be examined by independent or non-prison doctors. It is true that Navalny's own physicians have written to him saying that he needs to end his hunger strike now, otherwise they won't have anyone to treat very soon. And the process of coming out of hunger strike is very difficult, and as you say, he is very weak. And in the meantime, the repressive state, the machine, is moving, and this is the biggest news probably of all, is moving against his political organization, which consists of several parts. One of its main parts is called Anti-Corruption Foundation. That's a body that does most of the quite explosive investigations into corruption in the top echelons of Russian power, and which recently made a film which had been watched by, which had been watched something like 120 million times on YouTube about a secret palace which Putin cronies have allegedly built for him in the Black Sea. That organization is the core of Navalny's political machine. He also has a network, an extensive network of some 40 regional headquarters stretching all the way from the western borders to Khabarovsk on the Chinese border, stopped by volunteers often, funded through crowdfunding. And what the state has done is now it's out, it's basically making them illegal. They're saying these organizations are extremists. They're effectively equating them with something like ISIS or Al-Qaeda. And I think it's quite telling that in Vladimir Putin's today, an organization that is anti-corruption foundation and anything that presents real opposition should be branded as and legally deemed as extremist.
I want to speak to the other component of the news, which is the state-to-state relations. Vladimir Putin is teasing us with the idea that he might meet with Joe Biden. The Economist has written that there are tools to deal with nations that act badly in Ukraine, threats to the Baltic state, Navalny. There are other other instances, and one of them is sanctions, another one is embargoes. But the Economist has written that those are less than effective because Russia has, over these last years, over the last decade, created a command economy that is a fortress. That's the metaphor that the Economist uses. And therefore, outside shocks are not profound. However, at the same time, in meeting with Joe Biden, in some fashion, Vladimir Putin is taking a risk because the U.S., the Biden administration, has sanctioned him. So what is the best hope right now for a meeting between Biden and Putin? What will change the story? Will it help Navalny? Will it help his nascent political organization? Will it help relations between Moscow and Washington?
Well, I hope it can do those things. I'm not holding out much hope, but I think that communication at this stage is very important, because if Putin and Biden don't talk, if there is no channels of communications established, we're in a very dangerous world where both countries, you know, have massive nuclear arsenals. And in the darkest days of the Cold War, the communications was always key. I think for somebody who doesn't have the who's not naive in any sense of the word about Russia's intentions, like Joe Biden, who has the experience and memory of the Cold War, and who is not naive, who is not cozying out to Putin like his predecessor sometimes seemed to be doing, or at least excusing Putin for his blatantly, conspicuously hostile actions. I think Joe Biden understands the importance of those contacts and the dangers. He is also, I hope, and this is really, really important, I do hope that Joe Biden understands, and he seems to show that he understands, the deep connection between what's happening with somebody like Navalny, between what's happening with human rights and the abuse of human rights in Russia, and the elimination of opposition, and the issues of international security, you know, hard nuclear security, and the alliances, the U.S., the security of the U.S. allies in Europe. The main doctrine of the of the 70s, post-Nixon and post-Kissinger, post-realpolitik, you know, something that was embraced both, at least initially, by President Carter and by President Reagan, said that, and which initially was formulated by a great Russian humanist and the Nobel Prize winner and the physicist and the creator of the age bomb, Andrei Safarov, is that the issue of human rights is inseparable from international security, that a country, a regime that abuses human rights at home, that doesn't have a position, and therefore doesn't have any constraints and checks and balances, will most likely act aggressively towards the outsiders. So the presence of opposition, the respect for human rights in Russia, the fact that Navalny should be freed as the European Court of Human Rights demanded and the Council of Europe and every single politician in the West, those issues are essential not just for respect, just universal respect of human rights, but they're essential for security of the United States, because more opposition, the more constraints and the checks and balances that are on the Kremlin, the more secure the U.S. and its allies are going to be. So I hope they get to talk about it. I think this is going to be, you know, for Putin, it's very important to meet Joe Biden, because he needs, for his own legitimacy, he needs that recognition from the world leader. He doesn't want to be a pariah, because that will undermine his legitimacy in Russia. So he certainly needs to be recognized by Biden. And I hope that Biden gets the results. We're not going to see any detente. What we need is a detente. What we're not going to see is any reset of the kind that we saw in 2008 between Russia and the administration of Barack Obama. We need a very realistic approach. And I hope Joe Biden and his administration can bring it.
I want to speak of Europe. This is Arkady Ostrovsky. He is the Russia editor of The Economist. He's in London. And Europe gets a vote. So when we come back, Germany. I'm John Batchelor. This is the new John Batchelor Show, CBS Audio Network.
Chances are you've been to the doctor recently, and you probably handed over your insurance, your ID, and even your Social Security number. Your doctor is just one of many places that has your personal info. And if any of them accidentally expose your details, you could be at risk for identity theft. LifeLock monitors millions of data points a second. If you become a victim, they'll fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART, or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.